Hello, and welcome to the Ace Pod 1.6, brought to you by the law offices of E. Jason Blankenship. Yes, we have a sponsor now. We also have a mailbag to talk about because it's week one, and I'm trying to run through something quickly. There is some minor parking lot construction going on outside, so I do apologize if there's a little bit of ambient noise or jackhammering, but I'll try to record around it as best I can. And let's just jump right into it. There's a lot of questions after Michigan's victory over Middle Tennessee State, which was not the prettiest thing in the world. I thought it was, as I said on the MCO podcast itself and in the game recap, a decent week one victory. Obviously, there are some things to work on, but you know, maybe don't get your game impressions from the snowflake threads on the message board. So with that said, let's jump into a somewhat related first question from Hoover Street Rag at Hoover Street on Twitter. Hi Ace, is it possible to know too much about Michigan football's past to enjoy the moment? Like Shea fumbles on the first play, the entire rest of the game, someone, read me, is living in the quote-unquote other shoe to drop zone. I do understand the feeling. Obviously, I went to Michigan in from 2006 to 2010 were my undergrad years, so I slid from late Lloyd right into Rich Rod and then started covering this team for Hoke. So I've seen some things, and even if you go back to when I was growing up watching Lloyd, you know, there weren't bad losses, but there were those games that you know, were closer than you'd like against some subpar teams. But for the most part, I think we're discussing the Rich Rod and Hoke years when we're talking about something like the first play of the Middle Tennessee State game going awry and dropping down 7-0 and thinking this might be another catastrophe. And so since this was framed as knowing too much about Michigan football's past history, I went back and looked at Jim Harbaugh's Michigan record, because that is ultimately what matters here. And for me, I was annoyed when Shea Patterson lost that fumble and when Middle Tennessee State subsequently scored. At no point was I worried about the outcome of the game or even really how that sequence impacted, you know, what that sequence pretended for the rest of the season, which is, you know, hopefully Shea Patterson doesn't lose any more fumbles, but that wasn't super predictive. But anyway, I went and looked up some S&P Plus, now SP Plus, that Bill Connolly has moved over to ESPN. The final S&P Plus rankings for the teams that Michigan has lost to since Jim Harbaugh has taken over. And the average rank of teams Michigan has lost to is 15th in the final rankings. And there are only four teams, worse than 20th in the final rankings. One of those is Utah, in Harbaugh's very first game as head coach, playing with a roster of Brady Hoke's players. One was the game at Kinnick in 2016, which has some, you know, Iowa night game voodoo going there, if you want to count that, factor that in at all. One is actually the 2017 Michigan State game, and they were ranked 23rd. And then the other one is the South Carolina bowl game from that year. They were ranked 41st, but Michigan had kind of, I don't know if they brought their best in that one. It's been the case the last two bowl games. I'm inclined to not really include that. But there has not been a catastrophic game against a bad team. And Michigan has very much handled his business, usually in extreme blowout fashion. And really, when you look at the Middle Tennessee State game from a statistical standpoint, or even really the way the game played out after that early sequence, there wasn't much to freak out about from an outcome standpoint. And even for me, from a larger season-wide standpoint, I thought I was actually quite encouraged by some of the things that happened in that game. Michigan got answers at the second and third corner spots that, you know, we're quite encouraging compared to what we went into the game with. And probably the biggest concern from that game is defensive tackle, and that's going to be answered, we hope, by freshmen emerging and players coming off of injuries. I don't think you're going to see Ben Mason starting against Ohio State unless there's a lot more attrition on the roster. To answer the question, just think through it. I mean, these are not the days of Hoke and Rich Rod. This is a stronger roster and a much better coaching staff. And it really does make it a lot easier to sit back and watch these games without a heck of a lot of trepid. All right, the next couple questions both concern play calling. First one is from at Scott, followed by several underscores. I'm not going to count them. How important is it to not put too much of the playbook on film? Harbaugh seems to have a fear of not showing too much for other teams to scout against. Do other teams hide their playbook as much as UM? Are the plays being hidden so unorthodox that we must keep them secret? I mean, this is pretty general practice. I think if you watched a lot of games across the spectrum on Saturday, there were relatively mismatched teams, you saw some pretty vanilla games. There's definitely, I mean, first of all, we should set this early. Josh Gattis is the play caller. And there might be a certain amount of just him getting used to being a play caller for the first time baked into this. Obviously, Jim Harbaugh has a hand in the general game plan, but in terms of the play-to-play stuff, that's a Gattis thing now. I don't think, I mean, the kind of general idea with play calling is that you're establishing tendencies and then you are breaking them. So, I mean, a lot of our frustration with Michigan offenses of the recent past has been that they haven't done a great job of breaking tendency when it's time to do that, not doing so in a very creative way. But one of your goals in week one when you're playing a team that's not very good is let's get in and out of here without showing a lot. If you're putting stuff on film, it's probably to set up something for later. Hopefully there's something to the two quarterback package that is effective that they can use later. Although I'm still of the mind that they should just scrap it. For the most part, Michigan didn't have to break out their changeups, so to speak. They ran a couple of arc reads, but they weren't, you know, showing the many things that they can do off of that that would potentially spring big plays against better defenses. We might get a relatively vanilla playbook again next week. I don't think that's something to worry about in terms of a referendum on Harbaugh being conservative or Josh Gattis not being a good play caller. That's really pretty ideal as you're trying to get through the early part of the season without putting too much on tape, because the longer you can go without breaking tendency, the more surprises you can break out later in the season, the longer you can wait to unveil stuff. I'm sure Michigan in a new offense is still installing certain looks at this point. This offense hopefully isn't wildly overcomplicated, but I would bet that they're still adding some things as they go along here. It's still quite early with Gattis, and they have pretty dramatically changed what they're running. I wouldn't worry about the nitty-gritty play calling stuff too much. I would prepare for, you know, not being blown away by the X's and O's stuff until at least Wisconsin, because there's just no need to show it unless you're in a real game. Until Michigan gets into one of those, we might see him keep it pretty straightforward. And related to that, in a part that's not actually straightforward, is from the question from at Jeep and Ben. It's actually not really a question. My galaxy brain take was that the two quarterback frippery was just to put it on film for opponents to worry about. Talk about that. I'll hang up and listen. I wish, you know, I'd like to think that that was something that they put on just for opponents to waste practice time on it. At the same time, that's kind of hustling backwards in terms of any practice time there that's being wasted. You're probably wasting more by installing it in the first place. So, especially since it's pretty standard, you know, there's only so much that you have to prepare for, like, you know, tell your defenders, like, hey, there's a chance that, like, they do some weird double pass thing. But, you know, that's, otherwise you're just preparing for, like, hey, it's a jet sweep, like, and it's being run by a less athletic guy. I don't know. I'm holding out a very small shred of hope that they can actually do something effective with that stuff. They did have one successful play out of that look, Shea Patterson keeper. Maybe there's something there, but I'm kind of hoping that goes away soon, and they just keep the second quarterback stuff to just bringing McCaffrey in and giving him a drive, because that stuff was actually effective. All right, from at Naptown Jazz 12. I noticed Brian liked the two tight end sets. I personally felt it constricted the middle of the field, at least at times. Do you have strong feelings about two tight ends versus three wide receivers, particularly including a spread H? I personally like the two tight end stuff. Brian can get into this on a deeper level than I can, but the two tight end stuff really opens up a lot in terms of the running game and how you can mess with the second level, the linebackers and safeties, particularly with your blocking schemes, and with Michigan having a pretty diverse run game and a run game that is becoming more based on getting that second level running in the wrong direction. Having two tight ends, especially if Michigan really has two tight ends in Sean McCune and Nick Eubanks, and Eubanks had a couple nice blocks in the arc package on Saturday, if Michigan has two tight ends who are both legitimate threats to go downfield and catch passes and also put their hands in the dirt and block, that opens up so much flexibility. I mean, we did see them go to a quote-unquote four-wide look with two tight ends at least a couple times on Saturday. You can get great mismatches that way. It makes it tough for teams to figure out what personnel to put out there. It makes it tough on a down-to-down basis to know what to key on. Now, that said, when Donovan Peoples-Jones comes back, hopefully sometime pretty soon, I would also like to see, you know, Michigan's three best receivers on the field at the same time. There's plenty that they can do out of three wide looks as well. So, but I don't want to see less of the two tight end stuff. I think they can be quite effective with it. These tight ends are dynamic enough where I don't think it's taking away a ton in the passing game, especially also with the RPOs that they're now running that are springing guys open up the seam. That's stuff that Eubanks and McCune can certainly handle and turn into some pretty nice plays. So we'll see how it changes if and when they have all three of their top receivers healthy, but I would not expect the two tight end steps, the two tight end set stuff to go away at all. All right, we're going to take a quick break here.
When your plumbing breaks, you hire someone who knows how to fix plumbing. When your power goes out, you hire an electrician. When you are injured in an accident, you should hire someone with experience. Jason Blankenship, a Michigan law graduate, has over 20 years of litigation experience to help you. Jason has handled matters and venues across the state and country, from various circuit courts across the state through the Michigan Supreme Court and the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals. Jason's experience in both federal and state courts makes him able to handle your complicated personal injury case. Before starting his own firm in 2014, Jason worked at a large plaintiff's firm, but he left in order to give his clients the personal attention you and your case deserve. Jason selects each case personally, and you will deal directly with Jason to resolve your case. The insurance companies have teams of lawyers on their side. You should have someone on your side, too. Call 248-533-0516. That's 248-533-0516, or email jason@blankenshiplawyer.com.
All right, let's get back into it with some questions on the defense. The first one comes from at David Lecta. Is Mike Zorges secretly the best position coach in the country? It's still early, but this is definitely not the first time we've entered a season with DB concerns, only to have them emphatically proven wrong. It's early yet to say they've emphatically proven all of it wrong. I do want to pump the brakes a little bit on the, like, Michigan has figured out their entire secondary stuff, just because Middle Tennessee's game plan really was designed to avoid Michigan's pass rush, and they weren't really taking many shots downfield. So we've yet to see much of, say, like Vincent Gray actually having to guard some longer routes downfield. That said, he did everything he possibly could have in that game to show out. And obviously, Ambry Thomas had a spectacular interception in the flat and was very good himself. And Michigan didn't even really need Lavert Hill out there. They didn't actually play him that much. I'm not going to say definitively whether someone's the best position coach in the country. There are so many of them making a definitive statement like that is just kind of silly. But is Mike Zordich in the top tier of position coaches in the country? I think we've got enough evidence at this point to say yes, he is, with the level of cornerback play from guys at Michigan who also have not necessarily gone on to first round NFL status. I mean, Michigan's brought in some very good players, but even the best of them, Jordan Lewis, wasn't a first round pick. So I think Zordich has done a remarkable job with what he's been given, and hopefully that very much continues this year, because they need it with the way this roster is constructed. From Kevin Mack 21, instead of using Ben Mason as a traditional three tech, what would you think of using him as a Furbush style defensive fullback out of the stack, since he has a little bit of experience as a fullback already? I think I actually sort of jokingly mentioned this on the season preview podcast. There's a part of me that would love to see this. It'd be pretty hilarious just to have Ben Mason come screaming in there. And I'm sure he'd make somebody's day a little bit more miserable by having to take on that wild banshee of a player. But the hang up there is that putting Ben Mason on the field at that Sam linebacker spot takes Josh Uche off the field, and pretty much the whole reason Michigan would be going to a stack to use Ben Mason like they would Noah Furbush, or they did Noah Furbush, would be to get Josh Uche out on the field. That's why Michigan wants to run a stack this year, or one of the reasons. Yes, you're trying to hide the defensive tackles a little bit, but a lot of the time, mostly you're just trying to get that pass rushing upside of Uche on there. And then you also take away some of the versatility that you get with that stack, where the big thing with being able to break out that 3-3-5 is that it's difficult to know where the pressure is coming from, because you have to blitz. But if Ben Mason's in there, you know he's coming, because Michigan's not going to drop Ben Mason into his zone. So it's a fun idea to think about, but I don't know if it's actually practical. Got a few questions in here from I Am Stefan Zonia. What percentage of snaps do you see as Uche's optimal effectiveness? If he can hold up at all against the run, I think you get him as many snaps as he can handle. If that's 70% of the snaps, 80% of the snaps, whatever it is that he can take, you've got a guy who's he's one of the best players in the country, it appears, at being able to get to the quarterback. And when you have someone like that, you can take a hit in the run game. So I think one of Don Brown's big challenges this year, and also a challenge for the whole defensive staff to coach up Uche, is can you get him to the point in pass coverage and run defense to the point where you can have him as an every down player? Because, I mean, good Lord, when he comes off the edge, there's just nothing most offensive tackles can do about it. And that is such a weapon in against especially pass happy spread teams, but really against anybody. Maybe we're not going to see him a ton next week against Army, although if we did, that'd be a very good sign. But I want to see Uche out there as much as possible. Pass rush is so valuable, with Michigan also showing that they may not have a ton of upside with their basic four-man pass rush package. Get Uche in there as much as possible. Somewhat related, would we be better off running a 3-4, and would Don Brown do that? If they were, and I don't think the personnel necessarily fits it, because running a true 3-4 involves kind of a planetoid defensive nose tackle, and Michigan doesn't have anything close to that. Carlo Kemp's playing the nose at around 300 pounds. So a true 3-4, I don't think that would necessarily solve Michigan's problem. And at this point, installing a whole new defense, if they were going to do it, that's something they would have done over the offseason. If they broke it out right now, it'd be a panic move, and that's not something that they need to do. Finally, with Zach Charbonnet pass blocking at this level, have we seen the last of True? I don't know if we've seen the last of True Wilson necessarily, but I do think that Charbonnet's preternatural ability to pick up blitzes. He went 9 for 9 on Saturday, including a couple filling shakers. He packs a punch that True Wilson maybe does not. With Charbonnet showing out like that, that's going to cut deeply into True Wilson's playing time, especially with Charbonnet showing a little bit of potential as a pass catcher too. I mean, he's a five-star talent, and you know he flashed a lot of that in the run game. And if he's able to pass block right that like that, there's not a lot of reason to take him off the field except to keep him fresh. And I think the guy coming in that case is Christian Turner, who also looked very, very good in week one. Showed off some surprising power and also great balance. So love True Wilson. He might be able to carve out a little bit of a role as a third down specialist. He obviously had that great pickup to give Shea Patterson enough time to throw that deep bomb to Tariq Black for a touchdown on Saturday. But if Charbonnet is going to play like this, then he needs to get as many snaps as possible. From Emmy Polega 2, Mazi Smith was Defensive Player of the Week for the scout team. Does this make it seem like a next year thing, or just that he isn't quite in the two deep right now? I don't know what these coaches are thinking. I mean, you know, it could be a challenge thing that he didn't really get out there. It could be a legitimate concern about the freshman thing. But, I mean, with seeing Ben Mason out there, I think we're going to see those freshmen in there probably sooner rather than later. And I think, yeah, in this case, this is an issue of Smith, who, I mean, you don't want freshman defensive tackles out there, but if you do, you want them to be crazy strong, because that's usually the problem with throwing freshman DTs out there, is they're just, in addition to a lot of the technical stuff, they're just not ready from a physical standpoint. In Chris Hinton and Mazi Smith, Michigan at least has two guys who physically should be able to hold up, and then it's just about learning the defense. So hopefully they're just, you know, in the process of getting the defense down. They were not early enrollees, which would have been very nice this year, but hopefully between guys getting better from injuries and those guys learning the defense, they patch some things up at defensive tackle, because for the moment that is definitely the area of top concern on the entire team, especially with the seeming emergence of Vincent Gray and the encouraging progress of Ambry Thomas. This is an almost complete team that's just looking for a little bit more out of that defensive interior. All right, I think that's all for today. Thanks again to my sponsor, the law offices of Jason Blankenship. Make sure to download, rate, and review on iTunes for the whole MGO podcast network, is what I'm now going to deem it. Thanks for listening, and I'll be back hopefully with an episode next week. Have a good one.
When your plumbing breaks, you hire someone who knows how to fix plumbing. When your power goes out, you hire an electrician. When you are injured in an accident, you should hire someone with experience. Jason Blankenship, a Michigan law graduate, has over 20 years of litigation experience to help you. Jason has handled matters in venues across the state and country, from various circuit courts across the state through the Michigan Supreme Court and the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals. Jason's experience in both federal and state courts makes him available